Light should be intangible. It should just make you enjoy a space. It shouldn't be in your face. You should just come in and feel good. But if you come into something that is just a grid of lights with a white light, you come in and feel flat and it just feels unloved.
Hello, I'm Carol Annett from Country and Townhouse magazine. Welcome to the House Guest podcast, where I chat with experts from the world of interior design and decoration, the people behind the houses, hotels, shops and brands you see in glossy magazines like ours. And if you're doing up your own home, hopefully you'll pick up some tips for yourself.
Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Sally Story, creative director of John Cullen Lighting. Sally is passionate about the effects and impact of light on space and design. And also, and I think you're the only person I've ever known, you've kind of got a lighting Oscar, the LIT Award, a Lifetime Achievement Award. Does that mean you're retiring or something, Sally? Please don't.
Absolutely. Absolutely not. I feel very flattered to have got it. It was from Los Angeles, so international. And I didn't really believe it till they actually wrote me the letter and said I had won it. I thought I might be a runner-up. But I've been passionate about lighting throughout my life. It started at university when I did a thesis on light. It's never stopped. And I'm lucky to have lived through two revolutions, the halogen revolution and now the LED revolution, and really have a whole new vocabulary that I can use for my schemes.
So explain to us, because there is a lighting lexicon of words which can be very, very confusing. So let's start with halogen. Why has that taken a bit of a dive and we're now all into LEDs?
Well, the real reason was energy. We actually, to save the planet, have to reduce our energy consumption. And halogen was fantastic when it came in the 80s, because suddenly it was a miniaturization of a source that suddenly meant you could put museum-type lighting in your home to light your art before the spotlights were really huge and far too cumbersome. And it was a whole new tool for the residential market. The fact was, as anything, it often gets overused and used wrongly, but it did give you a wonderful color rendition that meant everything you saw was beautiful. And when it dimmed warm. But if you can imagine, what was 50 watts of energy now can be achieved with 8 watts of energy. So there's a huge energy differentiation. And I used to light things and uplight things with a 20 watt, which I can now do with a 1 watt. So just think of that energy saving.
When you say you can now do it with a 1 watt, you mean because you're using an LED?
Yes.
Yeah. So explain to us what LED actually stands for.
Well, LED is a light emitting diode. It was first what you saw on your stereo systems, those flashing little lights. And then it was realized that by actually treating them, and they sort of are grown as a chemical, and then they have a phosphor over them, they could actually be light producing in a very energy efficient way. So the early LEDs came about, and those days you had to be 25% compliant within a house. And I tended to put them all probably in the garage until that was said no, because those early LEDs were very cool in color. And the way they rendered, so where the halogen made you look at things properly, like daylight, the early LEDs didn't render what you saw, the color of your furnishings or the fruit or anything very well. It was quite dull and flat, but produced light and therefore gave a very flat light, a bit like, remember fluorescence, often the effect was really flat. And so quite a lot of investment had to be done, A, to make LEDs, and this is give proper color. So what happens these days is we look to the ones that are binned correctly so that actually the color of the light is all the same, because you can get different colors. And also that their color rendition index, which is actually what you're perceiving things. And that needs to be high, above 90 minimum. And a lot of the early ones were 70. So when you looked at your fruit bowl or a red color, it just looked dull and uninviting. But when you see it now, when you've made the investment, it looks much better. But it's understanding that that is important.
So what you're basically saying is read the packaging, as you know, as we're all taught to do. Read the packaging, understand what you're buying. And if you're buying cheap LEDs, then you're not going to get the best. It's something you need to invest in.
I feel it's important to invest in it, because if you think that you've invested in your surroundings, your curtains, your finishes, and then you like them and they just don't look like they used to, they don't look like they do when the sun shines in, and then it makes you feel depressed. I think the problem is the LED, to the person who's not discerning, and even the contractor can come in and say, oh, it's just the same. But really, it's when you see one against the other and you come into a space and it feels comfortable, you realize something is different. And it's usually the light. Light should be intangible. It should just make you enjoy a space. It shouldn't be in your face. You should just come in and feel good. But if you come into something that is just a grid of lights with a white light that doesn't have a good CRI, you come in and feel flat, and it just feels unloved. And you probably, as an individual, won't know. But if you change that lighting, it would make all the difference.
Yeah, it's one of those most extraordinary things. I've been fortunate enough to see quite a few of your projects, and there really is an absolute, you know, you can have whatever beautiful interior you like, but if you don't get the lighting right, the lighting can make or break an interior. And it really does transform a space, and it leads your eye to where you want it to lead it, or away from, and all those beautiful, very clever effects that you have in bathrooms and kitchens. And you know, it's such a clever thing to be able to do. And I love the idea, because you've also written a book, and I love the idea that, so the book that which is coming out in October, it's basically for architects and interior designers to understand LEDs. I'm so pleased that there are a lot of people out there that don't understand them, because it's such a specialist area, and you're one of the biggest names. I know you're traveling all over the world working on the most extraordinary projects. So can you tell us a bit about how you use, like, or what you do when you first get involved in a project?
When I first guess, I feel like I'm so lucky. Like, an interior designer will come into a project and has a palette of colors and paints and textures of paint, a palette of materials for the soft furnishings, combining silks with velvets. And it's a very easy palette to see. And what I think is rather wonderful is I feel I've got a similar vocabulary or palette with light. I will have and think, I don't want an even light. I immediately come into a space and think, what are the tasks to be performed? When do I need it to be bright? Do I need it to be moody? Do I need it to be both? And then I start thinking, which areas shall I highlight? So the idea of revealing and concealing with light is so true. If I don't want something to notice, I don't emphasize it. If I want something to notice, even if it's the flowers in the center of the table, which when you light them with a spot, almost make them look as if the sun has come in and that they've opened up. If you don't light them, they look almost dead. And it's wonderful, that feeling of just being able to bring something to life. And I think one of the things I play with is the idea of contrast, lighting something more brightly, whether it's the flowers or the art, then the infill light is softer. I'm always very aware of not lighting directly over someone's head, because I think what you don't want to do, and the bad experiences we've all had, is when you have that feeling of sitting under a downlight and you're trying to move just so you don't feel those awful shadows over you. It's knowing where to position things is key, so you can get that nice reflected light, and also to combine things with the decorative. These days, decorative lighting has moved on so much. And actually, it's an integral part of any scheme. And one of the things I'm work quite hard is working with the client or interior designer is understanding which decorative lighting they want to use, and then also working with them to find out what the correct light source is for it. Because too often, that isn't considered. And you're getting some manufacturers making with a quite cool light. And if I'm involved at the right time, I can help direct that so it forms part of the overall scheme.
And would that be just as simple as changing the light bulb? I mean, could it be as simple as changing a bulb or choosing a different bulb?
Sometimes it's integral within the decorative fitting. Sometimes it's as simple as choosing a different light bulb. Literally, we call them lamps, but there's so many out there which are LED. There are two things that people make the most common mistake is what color temperature to use. So 2.7 is really good. And sometimes you want in a table lamp, because I'm wanting to warm up the atmosphere at night, I'll go for a 2400 Kelvin instead. And sometimes I'll use a dim to warm one, but finding the right one is key, because quite honestly, a lot of them around become too yellow at the low end of the spectrum that then becomes murky. And so finding the balance, and I'm testing them all the time. And the other ones are, you need the same ones in the room with the same dimmer. Otherwise you'll find some dim and some don't. So what was a straightforward task with tungsten has become an impossible task almost.
You mentioned the Kelvin there. It does sound like somebody's dodgy cousin, but it's a very important word when it comes to lighting. Can you explain what the Kelvin is?
Kelvin is the color temperature. The color temperature, I will give you a few reference points. The rhythm through the day, it's about 2200 early dawn and goes at dusk and sunset to 2200. And there's a slow curve up throughout the day to midday, probably being 5,000 to 6,000, depending on the day. So what's unusual is the higher the color temperature, the cooler the light. And it's that bright whiteness. So halogen, which we used before, was 3,000 Kelvin. And it could dim down to about 2,300, 2,200. So we had that spectrum. LED, when it first came out, was about 4,000 Kelvin. And then they said 3,000 Kelvin was warm. But, and lots of people said we'd get used to it. And I knew we wouldn't, because if you think a candle or the fire, that's about 2,000 Kelvin. And what you want at night is to come back to that wonderful warm sunset feeling. You don't want to feel you're in bright daylight. Think of our computer screens these days. They all become warmer at night, knowing that it's not good for us to be under that bright whiteness. I mean, if you're doing surgery as a doctor, you might need it, because it's that get up and go feel. And so from a domestic point of view, I think you should look for the highest being 2,700 probably. 3,000 is a bit cold, because if you're not going to change the color temperature, 2.7 is definitely where you should be at your top level. Maybe 3,000 in your utility room, but I think I'm often much warmer for the softer things, like my shelf lighting would be 2,400 to make it feel warmer, particularly if the main use is at night, because that's when you want that warm color temperature.
And John Cullen has had some extraordinary introductions within the lighting industry. I'm thinking about the most recent launch. It launches the Minim, which is absolutely yes. Teeny tiny, about the size of a 5p piece. And that's a miniature LED. Where would you be using the Minim?
Well, where I'd use it is probably in a shelf. I mean, one of the things that I've loved being involved with LED was actually miniaturization. And the greater the output is from the smaller the chip, suddenly meant small miniature products were possible. And in conjunction with the LED being so small, was also finding optics, which are little lenses that can be used with the LED that can give me the option of a medium beam or a narrow beam. And therefore I can achieve different things. So I would try and put them, it's only 18 mil deep. So the idea was there would be this minuscule joinery light that you could recess in a shelf at no risk, and actually be able to light your favorite objects. So it's actually, it could be in a niche, a shelf, and sometimes I might use it where you light the objects at the front with your little minims, and you might use a linear strip at the back with a 2400 Kelvin to give you a soft backlight. And suddenly you've got this feeling of depth and then accent that is really wonderful. And LED's been transformative in what you can do with joinery.
That's very clever, the idea of one in front of the other. I never sort of think of light being used in that way. What about when you're working on either a listed property or a modern property? Are there any sort of lighting rules when it comes to working on different age properties?
Well, we all know that with a listed property, your hands are slightly tied. One of the key factors is that anything that is listed there, you've got to minimize the disruption and disturbance of the original and try and be as careful as possible. So you don't want to perforate a listed ceiling with lots of downlights. So one of the things I've been doing recently is working with decorative lighting to incorporate lights, because the LEDs have become so small, I can have a miniature spotlight. And I could actually, if I'm there at the beginning and you've got a custom chandelier or an old chandelier, I could actually put the lights within it. And if you're having it rewired anyway, think of having that added circuit. The other thing I've been using quite a lot of is surface mounted spotlights that I've discreetly put on the ceiling to focus on objects or artwork. And sometimes, because they're so small, and when they're directed to the wall, you hardly notice them. And in a way, it's like going back to an old-fashioned solution of a surface spotlight. The advantage is now they are much, much smaller, so far, far less obvious. And then the other thing that has happened is you can use uplights in the floor to light the shutter boxes and emphasize the architecture or the fireplace. Or you can actually use picture lights. And I think there's been a total resurgence of picture lights. And in fact, recently we've launched the Wallace, where we actually, which lights a painting properly. In the old days, you had the traditional picture light, even if it was frame fixed, which is what I'd always advise, because then at least it's always attached to the painting. Otherwise, you've got to know exactly which painting it is before. And also, it never used to light the whole way down the picture. It used to light the top, and that was it. Nowadays, the optics with the little LEDs are so much better that you can actually light down the full canvas width. And it's much more effective. And what it also does, it adds that layer of light. And one of the things, like the interior designer, I'm obsessed with lights at different levels, controls separately, that by building them up, they provide the mood.
It's like anything, isn't it? It's such an education, learning about lighting. And you really have to, if you want to get the lighting right, you have to be thinking about it right at the beginning of a project.
I think it goes with the plumbing, really.
Yeah.
And at that point, you're really having to ask people, do you know where the sofa is? Most rooms have certain almost obvious layouts and where you might put things. So I often suggest, why don't we make added provision so that even if you bring the cabling there and you don't know quite now, it's much easier if the cable routes are there to attach something later at very little cost than trying to do it at the end of the project.
Presumably that goes for the garden as well.
The garden is just the same. Is what you want is the trunking routes out to the various beds. And then often I do it later because often the planting plan comes far further down. If you've got a supply or if you've got terraces, you've got that pipe that goes under with draw wires, you can always pull something through later. What you don't want to do is have to pull the terrace up later. So I think it's forward thinking, and that's what is really important at the beginning of the project.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was why in my book, yeah, Inspired by Light, which is coming out, I've tried to highlight all the things you need to think about. And you know, it's by the RIBA. So they are very much thinking of it as it's not technical, it's half practical. It's more inspirational to make you think of all the things you might need to know about when you're planning a scheme, room by room. And what you need to know will vary depending on your style as well. Because some very contemporary interiors have very few decorative fittings. So you're having to think of other ways of providing that general light, which could be a recessed slot by the curtain. It could be a recessed slot instead of a lit cornice almost, which is totally different to the pair of wall lights. And it's still getting a balance.
I want to know, in your house, do you ever allow anyone to put up in the garden just some little twinkly fairy lights? Or, you know, when it comes to Christmas, do you have a particularly spectacular lighting display on your tree?
I'm afraid I'm a white light person rather than the multicoloured ones. And I love fairy lights. I actually think they're festive, pretty. I like the warm fairy lights. Remember that whole breed of really cold ice ones? I just wasn't so keen on those. And I have box balls and a box bed outside my house. And actually, you can't light those very easily. You can light through open. Like, I love lighting multi-stem trees because they're a bit sculptures. And if any of you think of a tree in the garden to be a sculpture and a tree, a multi-stem does it. But box is really hard to light. And actually, fairy lights on those either side of the door at Christmas, still, some things don't date. They're still really festive and you should never be afraid of it. It's like candles don't date. And I think thinking about things for the future is, if you're very selective and you choose to light things in different ways, they needn't date because they transcend time.
Yeah, absolutely. Sally, thank you very much indeed. It's been absolutely fascinating. And do you know when the book's actually being published? Is it October?
It's October. I think I get my first copy in September, but official launch is October. And I think you can order your copies on Amazon already. I saw it there and I was really surprised. I suddenly saw the cover and I'm still reading the proofs. So there we are.
Well, I will be on Amazon straight after this ordering my copy. Thank you very much indeed.
Thanks for listening to House Guests from Country and Townhouse Magazine with me, Carol Annett. In the meantime, you can follow me on Instagram at Carol W. Annett and keep up to date on all the podcast news and show notes online at countryandtownhouse.co.uk/podcast.